This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Sharad Kutin this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And how was your weekend?
Very good. Mother's Day weekend. So we had a bit of a girls' weekend. Had a nice hotel stay, some pampering, nice dinner.
A staycation.
Just you and your mother.
Just me and my mom. Oh, yeah, very nice.
Nice, very nice.
Yeah, a staycation. That's right. It was a staycation.
I called my mother and wished her happy Mother's Day.
Okay.
But for the first time in a long time, I made sure that I called the first thing in the morning rather than wait till the end of the day.
Was she very pleased?
I think so. I think she was, yeah. You know, it's better than me kind of forgetting, I guess.
Well, you told me something earlier this morning. You said that you don't think Mother's Day should be celebrated, or is it a more of a commercial holiday? What do you think?
I think it is commercial. I think every day should be Mother's Day.
But it's not, right? We
it's
often
not,
take
yeah.
up our mothers for granted.
You need one of these days to remind us about mothers, about the birth of Christ, about, you know, a lot of other things. Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I mean, commemorative days are there precisely to, you know, help society focus on something, do something a little extraordinary, something special.
Not too long ago, we mentioned that it was Siblings Day. I can't remember when it was. I think it was earlier this year, March, if I'm not mistaken. And then you said, why on earth is there a Siblings Day?
Yeah, that's a real act
that
of desperation.
Would be my question as well.
Well, what's the difference between that and Mother's Day?
What about Nephew's Day?
That's about to be one every day.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, in view of the very high commercial value in all these days, right, Melissa, did you have to plan for a long time to reserve your hotel rooms?
Yeah, I did it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and was it crazy?
It was a little bit more expensive, clearly. The prices were marked up, but because I got in early and I found a good deal, it was, I think, worth it in the end. Although the end of the day, at the end of the weekend, I was like, that was a lot of money for one.
See, so this is proof. This is proof that they create these days not just to make you get closer to your family or to your friends, but just to make a lot of money out of it.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, we do that. And it's not necessarily bad, right? I mean, because you're spending money on, you know, somebody you love or you care about.
It should
about.
Be for the right things, though. It shouldn't be for, I don't know, if it shouldn't be just for the sake of giving something, say, the sake of giving flowers if the person is not really into flowers, right? It should
be
something that they enjoy.
Sorry, I'm just trying to defend, you know, mindless consumerism here. I'm defending mindless consumerism because somebody has to in this room. Otherwise, it's going to be a really boring discussion.
If you took your date out on February the 7th rather than February the 14th, you would save a lot of money and you would fulfill that requirement to remember, right? But you would otherwise be termed as either ingenious or a cheapskate.
Cheapskate. Yeah.
I mean, look, honestly, when I think about my mother and what I could do for her, I mean, I don't do very much for my mother, I can tell you that much. So I think of something for the year, something that, you know, she no longer can do for herself or wants to do for herself that she used to love. And I hope it, you know, it borders on the special, but it doesn't have to fall on that particular day. But I do think about it.
Do you guys think that we Asians need it a lot more than the Western people? I mean, of course, they are very open in expressing their feelings, but the rest of us here in Asia have these days to thank for us to openly express our feelings to our mothers or
maybe.
I don't know. I think there are different types of Asian families.
Expressive culture.
No, I first of all, I mean, the term Asian gets us from, you know, the Bosphorus right down to, you know, the Kamchatka, whatever.
Peninsula. Right?
Yeah, I mean, but it's in the, you know, it's in the Far East, right? So the whole point is, I come from a family that's very expressive emotionally. And in fact, both sides of my family are just, you know, one is expressive, one is like, you know, like over the top expressive. So, you know, a lot of hugging and kissing. And I know that a lot of families don't do that. And people don't talk about their emotions and stuff like that. But I don't think that's about being Asian or not Asian. I think it's just about the kind of family you grew up in and whether people, had the vocabulary to express their emotions.
True. Well, let me tell you what's coming up for the rest of the show today, all the way till 10 o'clock. We've got Brian Greer, the president of Honeywell Southeast Asia, on the Breakfast Grill today. Ibrahim will be speaking to him then. Of course, Honeywell is an American conglomerate which produces everything from consumer products to aerospace engineering systems. So we'll be asking, can a conglomerate like Honeywell be nimble enough to navigate the 21st century, to evolve in the 21st century? And what are they actually focusing on here in Southeast Asia, since they produce a whole range of things? Will they be focusing on aeronautics or defense or down to electronics and even oil and gas?
It's really very interesting, this position of the conglomerates in the world order today. We were talking about Facebook setting up in Malaysia last Friday. And Facebook itself is becoming a huge company, not necessarily a sprawling conglomerate because they're very focused in what they want to do. But Facebook itself opens up opportunities for small businesses, for people to sell their services and to actually go out there and advertise the services in a jiffy. But in many parts of the world, conglomerates are seen as very evil, right? There are antitrust movements trying to break them up. We have the Bernie Sanders phenomenon and things like that. So for Honeywell, I mean, the products are so diverse, consumer and then aerospace, right? So what is the position of these companies going forward in the future?
Yeah, I just Googled Kamchatka. I must say, I wonder if they have any kind of interest there. It is extraordinarily beautiful. I don't know if you've seen these images.
Is it in Russia?
Yes, it's okay. In the Russian Far East, but it's just... Yeah, it's extraordinary.
If you play Risk, the game Risk, do you guys
play Risk? Yeah.
Kamchatka is one of those territories right on the eastern side and which crosses over into the western side, right? It's kind of like a strategic frontier that you have to defend all the time.
Oh, I love Risk.
Do you? Okay, we got to play one day.
I always lose. I'm terrible at war strategy.
you still have the board game.
I don't, but I love the game. Yeah, I think
go
it's
and buy one.
Game of strategy.
For BFMers, we could all sit down and, over lunch, play
and
Risk.
Hone
or you could download the
making.
App.
You're kidding. Is it now?
There is an app, makes it a lot more convenient to divide the armies. But what's the fun in that? Right?
Yeah, you want to move little plastic things, like the hotels and the houses in Monopoly, right? You just want to have a Monopoly.
I like to handle the cash in Monopoly, so that's a good thing about the board game. Okay, 8 minutes past six now, taking a look at current affairs today. We're going to be doing a roundup of the Sarawak elections with Ibrahim Sufian of the Merdeka Centre. Sharad, you're going to be speaking to him. What kind of issues will you be focusing on?
Yeah, we're going to be looking at, did the redelineation exercise have a major impact? To what extent the Pakatan's inability to come together and provide a united front really hamper or dampen enthusiasm? Or was it the state rights movement that really, in some ways, was the win in Adnan's sail?
Okay.
As well as questions of malapportionment. I mean, all the things that plague the Malaysian electoral system when it comes to free and fair elections, including the practice that, of not allowing opposition figures into the state or expelling them, and all those things. And I think it's an opportunity for some sort of reflection, I think, today, just to look back at those polls. And it's already a day after the results. So
good to have a roundup, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also, on Pressing Matters today at 9:35 a.m., we have P. Gunasegaram, former editor of Kini Biz, back on the show. He's going to be taking a closer look at Malaysia Airlines. Now, Guna has followed the Malaysian Airlines story very closely for many years. So today he's going to ask, what is a true turnaround? What does that look like? And is Malaysia Airlines on the right track to do so? Apparently, Christoph Mueller, CEO, said that the airline did turn around in February, but there seems to be no figures. What exactly does a turnaround mean? Is it purely financial? And if that's the case, I mean, you could sell off a couple of planes and end up with a profit, right? But a true turnaround has to go deeper than that. P. Gunasegaram will be delving into that issue on Pressing Matters today, 9:35 a.m.
I think to me, this whole question of Malaysian Airlines is because they are both a corporate institution and also a government entity. And that is the problem. That's the biggest problem, because the government has bailed them out many times. And that history taints its corporate mission and its corporate strategy. How do you go forward with that kind of baggage behind you?
Yeah, I think there's another dimension to it. So you said it's a corporate entity, it's also government-owned, but it also has this kind of sentimental value, I think, that's attached to the aspirations of, you know, modern and especially fledgling nation states, right, of having their own something or other, having their own airline. A national airline seems to be, you know, a sine qua non of independence, right?
Yeah, I think people should do that thought as experiment of whether they really need to own a kind of national airline. I think a lot of us are very sentimental about saying that, we need Malaysian Airlines. We need to own that. We need that national identity. But we haven't really explored
what it would be
if we don't have a national airline. Would the travel industry flourish a lot more if we didn't have one?
Okay, taking a quick look at some news for the day. Today, the Philippines will go to the polls for a general election. 5 candidates are in the race to become the new president. But the elections will also see a new vice president elected, some senators, and also about 18,000 local officials, including some mayors. There was news that a mayoral candidate was shot dead over the weekend.
Yeah, and I believe that he was the incumbent. He had had that position for many decades, and he was an independent. I think violence in Filipino political society is very rife, and depending on where you are in the country, it could be a whole host of reasons for why he was shot dead. But beyond that, I thought what was extraordinary was the kind of like 11th hour call by the outgoing president, Aquino, saying that the leader in the race, Duterte, would take Philippines back into dictatorship.
Well, he's the front runner, isn't he?
He is the front runner and most likely to win. And so when Aquino said that, he wanted the other candidates to somehow, you know, band together and prevent his success. Of course, none of them did. But it's a very interesting thing, because unlike perhaps warnings that are issued in America about a Trump presidency, you know, this is a country that's had a dictatorship, and coming across from a very different part of the country, but still they had the experience of dictatorship. So I thought it was a very, very curious move on the part of Aquino, and I wonder how it's read in Philippine society. Was it read as an overstatement or what?
Okay, well, we will keep you abreast with the developments of the elections as it happens this morning. But very quickly, over the weekend, Saudi Arabia announced the ouster of its longtime oil minister as part of a larger ongoing government shakeup. So by royal decree, Ali Al-Naimi has been replaced by former health minister and Saudi Aramco board chairman Khalid Al-Faleh. So Mr. Ali Al-Naimi was considered the de facto OPEC leader because Saudi Arabia is the biggest oil exporter.
Very much so. And he's been there for the last few decades. And I guess they are kind of either pinning the blame on him for not having eked out a kind of supply control for oil production. Also, I guess the fact that Saudi Arabia is really moving a different direction right now to try to reduce their dependence on oil. It's as much as that as the other as well. Mm. I mean, a new direction for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I guess it's a big deal for them to remove someone who's been in that position for so long, given the importance they put on having, you know, respecting for their elders and that hierarchy. 6:14 right now, and more with The Morning Run in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. psychedelic shack there by the Temptations. Good morning. It's 6:20.
Why? I just have to laugh on how you said it. Psychedelic shack.
It is a bit of a tongue
twister.
By the
way, have you guys ever watched Galaxy Quest?
No, but you texted us this weekend to say you were watching it, and I didn't really get the reference. What is it?
No, it's just it's a kind of a science fiction spoof, kind of based on you know, the kind of Star Trek model, you know, space 1999
okay.
or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's just that it's so funny. It's got this. It's got these ridiculous moments that made me almost kind of choke on my own tongue.
And how is that related to Psychedelic Shack?
Because it comes from an era, because it's so kind of like
well,
dated in 70s.
I watched this other thing over the weekend called DMT, the spiritual drug. And it's about how a bunch of scientists want to seek funding to go back to exploring all these. DMT is something, a substance that's available in nature.
Oh.
Right, so it's in us, it's in our pineal gland, and it's in plants. And so they're just asking the question of why nature provides this, right? And when you boil certain plants, you drink the water.
Does it calm you down? What does it do?
It opens up your consciousness to other things.
Okay, you know, the only drug that really matters at the end of the day, Julian, is love.
Okay.
Which is
you probably need some kind of
psychedelic. You're shopping around for kind of substitutes, but the only thing
all you need
it's
is
the
love.
Fifth element in the universe. Sorry, that
which
movie?
I understand what you're saying.
It is the movie, yes, of course. And speaking of love, sometimes we find love at the oddest
places.
And with the realities of modern work life nowadays, it often means that instances of people finding love at the workplace increases. But today we're not going to be talking about romantic love or sexual love. Today we're thinking about attraction at the workplace. Now, it's slightly different than what an office romance is thought to be, because interpersonal attraction often comes out from perhaps spending a lot of time with someone. It could also be seen as close friendships and relationships, which don't necessarily have sexual connotations.
But can we just clear the air for starters about office romance? I mean, are you guys for it, against it? Do you think companies should legislate questions of office relationships?
I don't think it should be legislated.
I think it's a little bit too draconian, and I think people should treat other people as adults, that they know what they're doing.
But do companies treat their employees as adults?
I have to ask, though. I mean, in this...
Let's not give them another excuse for another rule.
But you know, in previous years where you had that separation of work and life, you could go out and meet other people. But now, as companies demand more from you, you spend more and more of your life at work, it's only natural that instances of workplace romance will increase. And companies need to be flexible and open to adapt to those changes, right?
Yeah, but what's interesting is that insofar as, to the extent that companies legislate these questions, they always legislate, apparently, it seems to me, in the negatives. There's always a no, right? Basically, office romance, no. I've never heard of a company that says, office romance, go for it. You know, like, this would be good. It would be increased productivity.
They make you declare.
Why would it increase productivity?
Well, because you're happier. Because in
excited
the office,
to come to work.
Right. Yeah, excited to come to work.
I think most of the time it has to do with conflicts, because if you are seeing somebody in a sensitive department, you don't want them to share bedside secrets, right, about the company.
Right.
And so that's why a lot of companies discourage that. But apart from that, I don't think this kind of thing shouldn't be legislated.
Well, there's also the fear of, you know, relationships that don't work out and the negative environment that creates in the office as well. But let's go back to the topic of our article today, which Sharad, you found off Live Mint. And it's about interpersonal attraction in the office. Finding someone that you gel with and you spend a lot of time with that person. It's not necessarily a romance. There's not necessarily any kind of sexual feelings there, but it's about being attracted to that person and having a close relationship with your colleague.
Yeah, I mean, this article is from an Indian magazine, and I think what's been happening in India the last, 20 years or so is this emergence of kind of corporate India and a culture around the workplace in a way that perhaps signals a real shift. Now, I remember reading in Rana Dasgupta's book, A Capital, which is kind of a portrait of Delhi. He talks about this, the early start of, places like in Bangalore and such, where people, young people who, in an Indian context where this was not common, starting to hang out together, because of the long work hours, they would go, and there was a lot of emphasis on socializing with your workmates rather than, running home or coming to work with your tiffin and then running home to your wife and or husband or whatever, and, that kind of thing. And so, the shift of focus in where your life is. And right. I think what we perhaps take for granted now, which is the idea that work could be, and the workplace could be, your everything, mm-hmm. More so than even the domestic.
And it also has to be said that places like Bangalore is the IT center of India, right? It employs about 2.5 million IT professionals, which is about 35% of India's pool of IT talent. So it really jives into what you're saying, Melissa, about how the work and life lines are being blurred right now. And in the IT sector, a lot of people spend 24/7 at the office just trying to finish a project, and it's not surprising that this kind of thing arises, this office romance, office attraction.
Well, there's a joke going around that there's this thing called workplace goggles now, much like the beer goggles that after a few drinks, someone starts to look quite attractive to you. But the workplace goggles, after, a 12-hour day, people start to look attractive to you. People who haven't been attractive before start to look attractive
to you. Well, it's also because, especially if somebody's helpful, if they're always, caring and attentive, and maybe it's because of work, but it's also because they're such a great team player.
And especially if you have this kind of continuous exposure to a similar, like a similar wavelength, right? So if with friends, it's somewhat different because you see them, you gel, you laugh, have a good time, and then you go off your separate ways. But in the office, there's that continuous exposure to someone. And if you gel with them, it's heightened that you do gel with them. And that's, I think, the key to this workplace attraction that we're talking about.
Could it also be the fact that sometimes people are vulnerable and they're stressed out, and if there is someone who just show the merest signs of support for the other person, that kind of attraction can develop. Hey, someone is looking out for me.
Do you think that everything's heightened in the office?
And should you reverse engineer this? So basically, you work from the premise that that people are much more vulnerable at work and they're easier to hit on.
Yeah, you stress that person out and then you go hit on that person.
Yeah.
What about the opposite? Because we're in this little kind of a bubble together and everything is heightened, the smallest annoying traits can then, fester and become far more heightened than we initially. I mean, if you were outside, you'd just shrug it off, right?
Yeah.
Don't sweat the little things.
Yeah, I think the big question around this is how do companies, or how ought companies
to deal with this,
right? Clearly, companies try to legislate, things like office romances, but is it even possible? Because if people fall in love, on the corridor by the water cooler, on their way back from the toilet, I mean, what can you say? I mean, you can't stop it, right? All that will happen is if there's an explicit policy against it, then they will try and hide it. Mm. And that could be quite dysfunctional. So yes, it's true that when the romance dies, as romances do, and love turns cold and bitter under the sun, it's not good for the company. But even at the start, in the bloom of love, you're not allowing it to happen, and people are, living in subterfuge, and they're basically
hiding
mm-hmm. and then you don't even get that. So the company loses out on both ends, the happy end and the sad end.
I also think it's interesting that this is an Indian article, because it can be said that India is a very conservative society. And it's interesting that this author picks out a very specific idea about office and office romance to narrow it down to office attraction. It just feels that the question is being asked is there a force to try to stop people or to discourage people from getting into the kind of office romance, which is a detraction from the traditional, more traditional ways of unifying men and women.
We're talking about office attraction from a single person's point of view, right? What happens if the one party or both parties are married? How would the partners feel? Granted, it's just an office relationship, it's just a platonic relationship, but I'm sure there are some boundaries that need to be drawn.
Yeah, what if your partner came home every day and was effusive and about somebody, a colleague at work, and constantly talked about how wonderful this person was and how much they helped them? Would you feel insecure?
Yeah, let us know. Tweet us at text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. A quick tweet from Darth Vadai, who said, "Sharad, Galaxy Quest rocks with Tim Allen, plus Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, and there may be even a Galaxy Quest 2. BFM 89.9, the Chemical Brothers there with Let Forever Be. Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris, Julian Ng and Sharad Kutin here with me this morning. Daniel Arif is quite pleased with that Chemical Brothers song. Thanks for tweeting in this morning. Taking a quick look at the debate that's happening in China. There's an online debate following the introduction of a women-only bus in a Chinese city called Jingzhou. And that's riled some local men. Apparently, this is a new summer service which will run during morning and evening rush hours in an effort to cut down the number of groping incidents. But yet, some men are saying the incidences of harassment isn't common on public transport. And this is a huge way of discriminating against men because they're not allowed to get on the bus. They have to wait a lot longer to get home, basically.
Well, it's not an insurmountable problem. All you need to do is to put more buses on the routes, and then you solve the problem of not having enough buses. But I think it's if the incidence of groping is very widespread, then this is a very well needed short-term solution.
You know, the first time I experienced segregated public transport was in India when I was quite young, and I traveled there, and I was with, you know, a family friend, an older woman, and we were talking, and we took the bus, and, you know, and as the bus approached, for the first time, I was told, I got on the wrong side end of the bus, and I was told to go to the other end. And because for me, it was a bit disquieting.
Is it the front end or the back end?
I can't remember. Okay. All I, because this was like a long time ago. I'm talking about decades. Because, okay. You know, and I say when I was young, I really mean decades ago, Melissa. Thank you very much. But, you know, the important thing was that for me, it was like, oh, but, you know, I'm with my aunt. I mean, why would there be a problem? And so when I read this article, which you tweeted out, I mean, I can understand the outrage of men who say, well, this can't be common. I'm not that kind of man. So why am I being put out, and why am my rights being infringed upon? That's, in fact, some of the quotes in the article, right? Because if you're not inclined to do those kinds of things, then you are probably less sympathetic to these things. But I do believe that women in many countries do get molested, and I think in India they call it eaves teasing or something like that, which is a way of describing, you know, this kind of harassment. It might not be physical, but it would be a kind of psychological harassment of women, you know, kind of undue attention and such, right? So, yeah, you know, eventually I came around to feel that, well, okay, it's perhaps not a bad idea, considering, you know, changing male culture is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, in Japan they have that too, women's only trains, because if you go on the underground during the rush hour, it's really, really crowded. I mean, you're talking about body to body, right? Not bumper to bumper, but body to body. And you can understand why this kind of rules are instituted.
Well, okay, so female-only train and metro carriages have been introduced in China. It's a relatively new concept in China. It may be quite common elsewhere, but in China, it's had some varying degrees of success. Apparently, there was a video that went viral which showed an elderly man really kind of shouting at a driver after being denied boarding. He said, "You're discriminating against me. This is a public bus." And just to quote some of the comments in this article, it says, "Not all men are bad. Not all men are bad, but not all men are being, but aren't all men being are being discriminated here." There's no distinction being made, right? So men have to wait a lot longer. Jules, what if there's But the bus company hasn't imposed buses.
I feel for this man, but how do you impose this rule then? How do you take care of that problem?
Well, clearly nobody's looking at the signs on the forehead that say groper. I'm a groper.
Okay,
so what you're saying is have a register of gropers.
I agree with your point that this is a short-term measure. Great that buses, that there can be female-only buses and trains and carriages, but that's not the long-term solution. The long-term solution here is education for respect for women. To teach men that it's not okay to grope women just because it's a crowded train. Just because you have the opportunity doesn't mean you should take it.
Okay, well, I don't think it's a short-term solution.
I think it is a short-term solution.
Well, let me explain why I think it's not a short-term solution. I think that, you know, the challenges of gender relations are something that will stay with us, I think, throughout our species. I don't think we're ever going to get rid of it, but we can control it, we can sanction it, we can create structures that inhibit it. I don't think it's ever going to go away. So for me, it's just a parallel strategies. You have the strategy of giving options to women. So women who feel they would be safer in a women's only carriage can do that. But if you look at our KTM that has those pink carriages,
women
right?
Only.
Yeah, women don't have to be in there. They can be in the other carriages as well. So they have options. I think that's what's important is options for women. And which I think is also a long-term strategy.
But you don't have this kind of thing in, let's say, North America, in the United States or Canada, where if you really go and grope somebody, whether it's a man or woman, you'll be in deep trouble.
I remember when I was working in KL and I took public transport, I took the LRT to work every day. And I remember one particular really busy day, it was packed like a tin of sardines. And I think there was a commotion behind me, and it turns out that there was a man who had groped a woman, and she had kicked up such a fuss. She yelled and she named and shamed him, and everyone around her kind of rallied and kind of kicked the
That's
guy
great.
Out of the carriage,
That's
which
fantastic.
I thought was great. The guy looked really contrite. He looked really bad.
But, I mean, there are countries, I think in many countries, you know, sexual harassment, physical sexual harassment would in fact bring about some serious sanctions, right? So, but that's not the problem. It doesn't necessarily mean that the phenomenon goes away or it's curtailed. And, you know, I was just looking at around the internet. Apparently, and this comes back to the Eve teasing thing, Bangladesh has designated...
Euphemism, by the way.
Eve teasing.
Where does it come from?
Eve as in, you know, like Adam and Eve. Eve.
Oh, right.
Teasing. And so I don't really know the origins, but apparently in Bangladesh, June the 13th has been designated Eve Teasing Protection Day. By the Ministry of Education there. So basically, and this is, I think, as much about the women as it is about the boys, because women in that country have committed suicide as a result of Eve teasing. So, you know, you can imagine in conservative societies where there already is quite a bit of gender segregation, metropolitan areas, urban areas create perhaps real challenges for those kinds of conservative societies, right? And as those societies change as well, you know, how do you deal with these relationships? When it comes back to the office situation again, yeah. Attraction. How do you deal with attraction in a conservative society?
You're right in saying that it's all part of a society that's evolving, right? As it becomes more corporatized, more developed, more work-centric. Now that women are in the workforce, women have to travel a lot more. And they're demanding the same rights. It's, you know, trying to change the cultural mindset, I think, is
well,
really
remember the German case where there was all that groping, I think it was over a particular night where everybody was celebrating in public areas, and, you know, and the initial report suggested they might be migrants or, you know, and such. In fact, it didn't turn out to be that way. But, you know, the problems of intergender relations, I don't think are going to go away so easily.
I wonder if there is a simple solution to this, because this is all about infrastructure breaking at the seams, buses too packed, too crowded. You remember the days, the minibuses days in KL when you I used to hang out, you know, like a monkey, at the entrance, because for what is a bus that can only take a capacity of what, 25 or 30, they pack it up to 100, and you know, in those kind of situations, you would expect trouble to happen. And I'm just wondering if you can just throw infrastructure at this case and just have more buses, or have more buses plying the route.
I don't know. Do you think this is just a simple case of spreading out the infrastructure, Shira? Do you think that could be a solution to this?
Well, I don't know, actually, if there's a permanent solution to anything. I just think everything is a possible strategy to give people options, create safe spaces and such. But my contention, and I believe it would be a contested one, is that you're never going to get rid of this. You're never going to get rid of this problem, because I think just the nature of how people are and how men are.
I'm sure that in other societies, in developed societies, that this is not a case. You don't need segregated buses in, say, New York, because
rape doesn't happen, because molest doesn't happen.
It does, but not to the point where you need to make it, to legislate it.
Well, I mean, I don't know.
To have segregated buses and trains.
I don't know about the American situation, but I cannot believe that gender relations are any better in places like New York, and that women do not face as much harassment. And clearly sexual violence against women in developed countries is quite intense as well. So, you know, I don't know if it's about the issue of, you know, development. I think what development does is to give women options.
I've been in very, very crowded cars in the MRT and the tube in Hong Kong and in Singapore. And, you know, this kind of situations are very, very rare. You don't see it happen at all. So it'd be interesting to look at those kind of situations and see what they're doing right or wrong.
Yeah. 6:51 right now. News is coming up at the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.